Welcome back to Lawyers Who Need Them. I'm Randall Simonetti.
And I'm Jim Hartman.
And we appreciate you joining us here on this absolutely gorgeous, well, where we are, it happens to be gorgeous.
Oh, great day here.
Monday, and great start to the week.
We don't have too many of these days, I'll
tell you. And it's getting, the trees are changing in the Northeast.
That's right.
That means winter is on its way. But before winter comes, it's time to take some questions from our listeners.
And now it's time for the main event.
Oh, there it is. All right. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
You have your thinking cap on?
I'm thinking cap.
And here we go. Our first question today is from Albert, and he is from Dallas, Texas. He writes in, Dear Jim and Randall, have you ever met a jury you didn't trust?
No. No, I really haven't. I trust juries. I think jury trial is still the best method in the world for settling disputes. To have the matter and issue decided by your peers, it's a system that is goes way back, even before Magna Carta. There were the embryonic juries, so to speak. There were forms of juries. Even tribes put up an issue of right and wrong, two people in dispute, before a group of tribal members.
So
there are primitive forms of jury even before Magna Carta, when we got the kind of basic jury that we, pretty much what we have today.
Now, Magna Carta was before Rose Carter. Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter,
and his drunken
Carter.
Brother.
This, Magna Carta was a grandfather of theirs.
That's right.
He started the peanut business. And and the reason he had very large peanuts, we call them Magna Carta.
I see.
He had the big peanuts.
Big peanuts.
Try to swallow one of those and you'll suffocate.
All right. Well,
okay.
How about judges, he says. Did you ever meet a judge you didn't trust? Every week.
I would say, yeah, a lot of times.
All right. Well, that's enough for Albert. Thank you for your question, Albert. We hope you like the answer. And if not, that's what you get. You get what you pay for around
that's
here.
Right.
Dina from Macon, Georgia writes, Dear Jim and Randall, what types of cases are heard in family court?
Who was buried in Grant's tomb? Obviously.
Family court cases.
That's right.
Well, maybe they hear other things, too. That's a fair question.
Matters related to the family. What are they doing? Who knows, really? I really am being a little fresh, and I shouldn't be.
Yes, you are.
In the family court, you hear matters related to, depending, first of all, some places call a family court, some states call it children's court, some have other names for it, but what it is a court devoted to the problems of families. For instance, custody, sometimes amounts that have to be paid. Many, like in our state, handle juvenile delinquency.
Right. See, there are other things.
A lot of things that they handle which relate to the family as a unit, to the problems with families, support, children who are misbehaving, stuff like that.
Okay.
So basically, depending on the jurisdiction, the state you're in, or it will depend on the breadth of what those particular courts handle.
Okay.
So I can't give you a universal answer.
But you almost did. You gave her a global one.
I gave you what best I can do under the circumstances.
Okay. All right. Gene from Mount Morris, New York. That's not far from here.
No.
Dear Jim and Randall, under what circumstances can a lawyer be disbarred?
Under several. If he's a thief, he gets disbarred. And if he gets caught.
Right.
For commingling funds. That is to say, lawyers maintain escrow accounts for clients' funds, because very often they have to hold money that has to be transferred at some other time,
right,
or as security for something. If they commingle those funds with their own, they can be disbarred for that.
Okay.
They can be disbarred for attempting to bribe a judge. They can be disbarred for dishonesty, for lying to the court. They can be disbarred for being crooked. They can be disbarred for anything that would constitute a felony, plus a number of other things. And so at least I'm talking, as I understand it, that's pretty universal.
But not stupidity.
Well, they ought to be, but they don't have to be disbarred for stupidity.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
So it's the things you would really think of in your own mind that are the grounds for those disbarments.
Right.
Common sense.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you, Gene.
Yeah.
Harry from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania writes, Dear Jim and Randall, why is our legal system set up in an adversarial manner?
Well, it's an interesting question. And we go back, this goes back hundreds and hundreds of years, really, to the original system, which as it evolved in England, in feudal England. But, you know, we also, before the adversarial system, we had trial by battle, which was adversarial.
That was pretty adversarial.
If you were suing me, I'd pick a contestant, you'd pick a contestant, and they'd kill each other. And one who alive won. Then they had trial by ordeal. You know, you would be dunked. You could be dunked in water, drowned. You were put underwater with a weight, and if you rose to the top, the water rejected you, so you were guilty. If you stayed underwater and died, you were innocent, but it doesn't matter because you died.
You're gone.
There was trial, but they burned you, and they tortured you, and they did all that. Well, finally, we got to the point where we decided that, as the saying goes, truth is wrought on the anvil of adversity.
Uh-huh.
So what you do is you
have... Who said that? Some blacksmith?
Who knows? Who knows and who cares? Sounded good. Let me say it.
All right.
Now you got me all mixed up. But anyway, so they feel that if two people, one says it happened this way, the other one said it happened that way, the trier of fact, the jury, can listen to that evidence and decide which is truthful based on the facts, based on the demeanor of the witnesses, based on the believability or the credibility of the evidence under the circumstances, based on circumstantial evidence, not only what's told, but what's observable through the evidence adduced and proffered during the trial. So that, in that way, what I say, adversity?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Justice is wrought on the anvil of controversy.
Oh, no wonder.
Controversy.
I was confused.
Controversy.
That's what it was.
So they feel it's almost like reading the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. The New York Times is left of Stalin, and the Wall Street Journal is right of Attila the Hun.
There
and
you go.
Somewhere in between, the truth lies.
Okay.
So you judge for yourself on the evidence. Good
right.
question.
It's
good
a very
question.
Good answer.
Yes.
That was
good
a good
question.
Answer, even though you misquoted a blacksmith.
Well, yeah.
Betty from Washington, D.C. Right. writes, Dear Jim and Randall,
I went to that same blacksmith with my horse. I said, is my shoe ready? He said, it'll be ready Thursday.
The same guy. All right. I think that's. I think he, in the back of the blacksmith is a cleaner's because they always tell me the same thing about my suits. Anyway, Betty from Washington, D.C. writes, Dear Jim and Randall, do you think that marriage mediation is a better alternative to divorce court?
Well, I don't like divorce court, but, of course, that's my own personal opinion. I think that you have a point, that marriage is of such a sensitive nature. Should that be, by the way, relating it to the last question,
that's
should
right.
that be subject to an adversarial type of proceeding where you're dealing with sensitive human relationships and familial relationships, things like that? I think that mediation is a good thing in that particular atmosphere, in that particular setup, in the matrimonial field. I don't think mediation is universally good for everything, although I do think it does help in almost every situation. I'm not talking about arbitration. Mm-hmm. I myself don't like arbitration.
We talked about that last
time. Yes, we did. But as far as mediation is where someone comes in and tries to deal with each of the parties and talk them into settling the thing, talk them into amicably arriving at a solution, I think that's a good thing to do, particularly in this the context of domestic relations matters, matrimonial matters.
All right.
So,
well,
yes.
There you have it.
Yeah.
And with that, we conclude this week's edition of Listening Questions, or Questions from Our Listeners, as they say. So with that in hand...
As they say, who says?
As they... Find your Simon Hart
Time
Award.
Time goes very quickly
it
when you're having fun.
It flies by when you're having a good time. There's no question about it.
Right.
Are you ready?
Must be dragging for the audience.
That's right. I was going to say trial by... What was the term you used?
By ordeal.
Ordeal. That's more like it.
Yeah, right.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this week we give a little... award out to people who screw things up. And this one goes back a little bit, but we want to share. This came up in the news again today, this week, so we thought we'd have some fun with it. So now it's time for this week's Simon Hart Award. Oh, there it is. This week's Simon Hart Award goes to Michael Jackson and Macaulay Culkin for sleeping with each other and revealing the details to the public. In addition, Jackson revealed that he and Culkin hosted a series of Hollywood-style pajama parties.
Our information has it that the guests attending the Neverland pajama blowouts also slept with Jackson. The list includes Buster Keaton, Laurel and Hardy, Bela Lugosi, The Three Stooges, Abbott and Costello, and the Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
You know, you got to have a big house.
Well, he's got a whole Neverland.
To sleep with a Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, well, folks, it's time to introduce our crack crew. Of course, our orchestra leader, Professor Stanley Staccato.
And our meteorologist, Gail Force.
Our sports reporter, Crash Dugenhausen.
Our studio engineer, rollicking Randy Meyer.
That was easy for you to say.
That's right.
Our producer, Chris Confounded-All Wedding.
Our studio engineer, I have him. Yeah. Our sound effects specialist, Horatio Heart Attack Wingate.
That's right. Our technology advisor, Miss Laverne Lazzarino.
Our legal historian, Sir Edward Faversham III.
Good fellow.
Yes. Oxford, you know.
Really?
Yes, always wears the shoes.
Our hair and makeup specialist, Miss Georgia Peachbuzz.
Our medical advisor and professor of proctology, Dr. Seymour Guts.
Our director of impressionism, Mademoiselle Camille O'Contraire.
And our Italian limo driver, Mario, just in a time.
Just in a time.
Just in a time.
Here he comes. Just in a time. Here he comes. Just in a time. Every week. He gets us here in
just in a time.
Every week, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes he actually opens the door and throws us out in front of the studio, which is a little hard on us, but we're used to bouncing. Anyway, well, you've survived another hour on Lawyers Who Needs Them. Have a great week. We'll talk with you next Monday. And remember, no matter what happens, folks, don't sweat the small stuff.
And remember, folks, it's all small stuff.
That's all, folks.